Punk's not dead, and neither is New Wave. Join Buzz and Ben on Static Rage, the Punk and New Wave Album Review Podcast.
And welcome back, everyone, to Static Rage. I am Ben. With me, as always, is Buzz. And today, we're going to do something a little different. How are you doing today, Buzz?
I'm doing quite well. I'm actually excited to talk about tonight, as the person, or I guess band, we're discussing is very close to me physically.
Indeed. Indeed he is. Or at least he was. I guess he still lives in that area. As you can undoubtedly tell, because we put the album covers up, we're going to be talking about Straight to Hell, the third studio album by Hank Williams III, or Hank III as he is more colloquially known. This was released on February 28th of 2006, has runtime of 87 minutes and 56 seconds. It was released on Brook label and produced by Joe Buck, Andy Gibson, and Hank III. The band, fairly large. Hank III on vocals, acoustic guitar, electric tic-tac bass, tremolo guitar, phaser, and a bunch of other stuff, bongs. Joe Buck, electric bass, stand-up bass, mandolin, accordion, guitar, electric tic-tac bass. Andy Gibson, steel guitar and dobro. Donnie Herron, fiddle and clawhammer banjo. Johnny Hilland on electric guitar. Sean McWilliams on drums. Randy Kors on dobro, steel guitar and backing vocals. Tim Carter on banjo, Eric B on guitar, Tia Sprockett, Rod Jansen, Tia Sprockett on backing vocals, Rod Jansen on electric guitar, Joe Fazio on drums, and Travis Skunky Gillespie on harmonica.
So that's also what is known as the Damn Band. As yeah. If you ever go see him, his live shows, he always calls himself, "I'm Hank Williams, this is my Damn Band." And that's really what they call themselves. So it's kind of interesting to know that that's what they call themselves live, at least. And I guess I'll go ahead and start off by saying, while this is not the first Hank Williams album I ever heard, this is the one that really got me into enjoying him as an artist more, because he started to branch out. His very first album, he's actually not a fan of, and that was actually released, I believe, in 99. I was in high school. And I remember listening to it going, okay, this is not what I'm used to hearing, but whatever, it's just country. And I didn't think about it later until after I got out of high school. So by the time this album comes around, I'm already in my 20s and I'm like, oh, okay, this is actually not that bad. I'm kind of into this. So for those who've never heard this before, yes, Hank Williams III is the great grandson, well, grandson of Hank Williams Sr. So cool thing about this is he apparently looks a lot like his grandfather, and he actually sounds like him too. If you ever hear Hank Williams recordings, he sounds like eerily close to him, more than even his dad does.
Yes, and of course his dad is Hank Williams Jr. Definitely, he definitely favors his grandfather more than his father, although, you know, it's not that this matters, but since his dad had the accident and had to have surgery on his face, who knows how much that affected it. But yeah, he sings in a high nasal voice, much like his grandfather did. Is really like, this is most of this album is straight up country with a few outlaw elements and then some other stuff that we'll talk about to make it sound discordant. But he's been in and around extreme music for pretty much his entire career and or life. As we alluded to when we did the Samhain review and we teased this one, I mean, he's played with Danzig a bunch of times. He's been a bassist in Arth and Anthem and I think even Superjoint Ritual at one time with Phil Anselmo. So he is in Ass Jack, which is a much more punk band, and we'll probably wind up doing some of that here as well, because it actually fits in more with what we have started doing when we started the podcast. So yeah, this guy has not only like musical bloodlines, but in quite an amazing musical pedigree, and the number of things that he has done, and he's done most of them with the exception of his debut album, which, as Buzz alluded to, he hates, without much support from the music industry itself.
So the another thing about this, well, Hank 3 in general is he's almost more punk than he is country. I mean, I feel like his country music is a little more popular because it reaches more people, but if you ever see him live and been, have you ever seen him live before?
Yeah, I've seen him live a couple times.
Okay. So what's cool about Hank is usually his shows go like this. The last show I saw was, I think, in 2012, 2013. He did it in Nashville on Halloween night, and he and the damn band came out. They're all dressed as skeletons, and the entire show was 4 hours, and it was not an opening act. It was all Hank the Three. So it started off with his country stuff for like the first like 30, 40 minutes. They took a small break. Like they all took got a chance to like get some water real quick, and then they swapped instruments and went into a punk set that lasted for about 20, 30 minutes. And then the last hour and a half was all just straight up metal. And that is what a Hank Third the show is usually like. Not always, but he usually jumps back and forth. The reason I bring that up is I appreciate that more than I could probably even put into words, because that tells me you're a good musician. Not necessarily a great musician, but a good musician. And I tend to prefer people like that. I think I've said as much in past podcasts on this, at least on this channel. I appreciate people that can do multiple things, maybe not amazingly well, but have a little more talent for everything, because I feel like it reaches more people.
Yeah, and the concerts that I went to him, I don't think were quite that long, but it was very similar. It was actually really cool. I mean, he is very engaged with his fans, or at least he was back when he was still active. He's kind of been on hiatus for a few years, partially, he said, until he could recoup the money that he self-invested in. He released three albums at one time. He said until he recouped the money that he spent to do that he wouldn't release another album. And then there's been. Yeah, I think he had some equipment stolen from his property, and there was a flooding on his property. So there's been a lot of life turmoil. So he has not been active as far as making new music in the last few years. But what I was going to say is that, he comes out and he does the country set, and then he'll stop it. He at the shows that I've been, it's like, okay, that's the end of this, the country set. And if that's what you came here to see, thank you for coming out and supporting me. And then he would get down and go through the crowd, shake hands, and sign autographs and stuff, and then went back up there and did the punk and metal stuff.
Yeah, it's essentially that. I've only been to two shows, that one Halloween concert, and then there was another show I went to that was essentially that's what happened. He came down, and the older, I call it the older crowd, and of course we're older now, but it's the older people came up for the country set, and then he almost gave him a few minutes to actually leave before he jumped into that. The Halloween show, he just was like, nope, I'm gonna get some water real quick, hold on. And like 5 minutes, I just jumped into the punk stuff. Again, I like the fact that he can do that, and he knows his audience, and he knows, hey, there's certain people that may only like one or two types of my music, and that's cool. And maybe everyone likes all of it, that's cool too. The other thing about this guy is he lives very much a outlaw country life. If you ever like look up what some of the stuff he's done, when back in the 90s, he I guess had some child support issues, and he was playing in different punk bands. And I guess a judge ordered him to get a real job. So he spent like the next 4 years, I guess, working a quote unquote real job. And then that first album hit. And of course, other things happened too. If you look up his grandfather, I mean, his grandfather was pretty wild compared to what you might consider some of the music in. But if you understand what outlaw music is, it's more real and raw, and it's more what I would consider real country. Things like early Waylon Jennings. I mean, there's a lot of, hey, I did all these things, and I might be like just telling a story, or it might have actually happened. Who knows? And that's what a lot of like real country is. It's like, man, this guy either did this, or he knew someone that did it and wrote a song about it. And the reason that's important on this channel is that's kind of what punk and hardcore and even some metal is. It's almost like, oh, these things happen to these people, and now they're talking about it. So I think I've said it before, but like real, true, raw country and bluegrass have a lot more in common with punk and metal than they do with modern country. And I've had arguments with people about that, and it always comes down to the lyrical content and the stories they tell.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, it is more, it's the truth revealed in the music as opposed to what instruments you're playing or whether you're following a certain structure. I mean, those things are important too, but you can tell the truth in a rap, you can tell the truth in a metal song, a punk song, or and then some flat picked bluegrass. And I think that always shows through in a way that Bo Burnham did a thing where he released a country song called Panderin'. And that is what I think most pop country and a lot of pop music does. It's pandering to its audience. And I'm not going to say there have been some accusations that Hank 3 has done the same thing. But I think that is more falling into the lyrical tropes and of the outlaw slash punk music that he's making, as opposed to like, I'm going to write a song about going out and cruising for girls and drinking beer in my $50,000 pickup truck, as opposed to like him talking about fucking going out mudding, being high off his ass, and being chased by the sheriff, you know.
Which is essentially a Friday night in the South. And if you don't think it is, if you're not from here, that's pretty much what it is. Even if you're not very country, that's usually what happens. You usually go do something dumb in the woods, and then either you have been in trouble by the law or you know someone that has, and you know enough about from either perspective how to handle yourself in that situation. But yeah, that's essentially what this album is. Essentially, it is country, but it still falls in line with what we talk about in this podcast. If you were to speed it up a little bit, and actually, maybe we'll talk about it a little bit later, but there's at least one song off here that was covered by a metal band, and it's not terribly bad. So the same band also has done other like country covers, which some are better than others, but they're still interesting how they work out, and it works kind of well to that style of musical playing. So when we get to the end of the talking about this, we might go into that a little bit. But no, the entire point of even Outlaw Country in general is just it's very much what you consider a punk song, just slowed down and has more twang and has a steel guitar
Yeah.
and maybe a fiddle.
Another thing that I really appreciate, especially on this album and the ones that follow, or yes, follow it, is that there will be sonic touches that he puts in here. There's a hidden track on here that's not really that hidden. That's just what it's called, Untitled, which is on the second disc if you have the CD version, or it's the last track if you listen to it on streaming, and which is a sound collage of a bunch of different stuff, and that's incredibly psychedelic. However, on like the actual tracks on the first disc, this is one of those things where they will use a lot of reverb on the vocals, or do a pan wash through the instrumentation, like I said, to make it sound a little discordant. So it's pretty much played as straight up country or Western swing or bluegrass or what have you, but there is a stylistic element that is then laid on it to make it, you know, whether it's because he's into the occult, he has played benefits for Aleister Crowley's daughter, not Aleister Crowley, shit, Anton LaVey, and all this other stuff. And like the very opening of this, Satan is Real, which is a Lubin Brothers song talking about how, which is what the title is. And he takes that and then morphs that into Straight to Hell, where he talks about living this drug fueled life is going to send him to hell and he's ready to go. So he layers in all these elements to make it just different enough to make, if you are somebody who only listens to country and you were to pick this up, it might foster a sense of unease.
Yeah, so to kind of expand on that, extrapolate, I guess would be a better word. There's, at my current job, there are three people that know who Hank the Third is. One of them is kind of very into them. One of them is kind of on the fence about it. And the other one, it's funny because he's the youngest, like up and down, just, I hate it. It's not real country and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, dude, it is though. This is essentially the same lyrical content. Well, maybe not the same lyrical content, but the same type of shit that you listen to because you know your dad and grandfather listened to it. It's just he's being more vulgar and open about it. But this is the exact same stuff, man. And I go back to what I say about Hank Williams Sr. Yeah, it's very, very whitewashed. It's very safe for the time period it came out in. But I'm like, if that guy had been living today, he probably would have done the same kind of thing that his grandson's doing. And I think you have to kind of take everything like with a grain of salt because, and then I'm going off the rails here a little bit, but like his dad, Hank Williams Jr., I don't dislike his dad, but his dad is almost more safe than the grandfather was. And a lot of that, I think, is because he's gotten so popular over the years. So more
Yeah.
people listen to it. And it's, I'm not going to call it pop country, but it's almost on the verge of being pop country, just with how
Well,
popular it is.
I have a thought on that, and so let me interject that.
Sure.
Is I don't disagree with what you're saying. I think that Hank Williams was senior was operating in a time where there was a lot more censorship in music, and you couldn't get stuff on the radio. And he was on the Louisiana Hayride and stuff like that. But yeah, he was living an incredibly outlaw life. I mean, passed away at 25 in the back of a Cadillac, all this other stuff from drinking, basically drank himself to death. So yes, definitely living the lifestyle. But he also they would sneakily make allusions to stuff in songs, such as, and I don't think he wrote it. It might have just been a cover, but if you got the money, honey, I got the time. Which was basically saying that, yeah, lady, if you got the money for us to go out drinking and partying, then I'll hang out with you. But as soon as you run out of that money, I'm gone. Which is, we were talking about like the 40s and 50s when he was doing this. I don't remember exactly the decades. So yes, 100%. Hank Williams Jr. Has songs that were socially transgressive at the beginning, but his had such a long career because I mean shit, he started performing when he was like 8 years old because they trotted him out to sing his dad's songs at county festivals and stuff, that you actually see a cultural shift that he was a part of to where what he was doing that was considered on the edge, kind of like the whole outlaw movement, Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson and all those guys, they kind of get reenfolded back into the mainstream. And I really think that happened to Hank Williams Jr. as his career went along and as he was becoming incredibly wealthy off of it. I can see why you don't tip the boat if you're doing what you have always done and now that's suddenly in vogue. And that was my minor defense of Hank Williams Jr. that I will give.
And that's all I'm saying. I don't like, and that's why I said I don't dislike Hank Williams Jr. It's just, it seemed like, and it may have been because I heard him later on in life and I heard his later stuff first. It's almost, I'd almost, I'm loath to say this because I'm not in like heavy into country music. So I'm sure someone listening to this might even correct me. But like Willie Nelson, early Waylon Jennings, early, guys that came out like around like the 60s, 70s, it seemed like it more was more, I don't want to say biting, but it seemed more edgy. And I hate to use that word, but I'm going to. It seemed edgier than what you might expect to be played on the radio today. Not all of it, but most of it. And I've always seen Hank Williams Jr. as more of a radio safe musician rather than, hey, he's got some good stuff, but let's keep most of his stuff off the radio play. And the people that are picking up on what he might be actually be talking about will leave that to the album. And that's again goes back to how I feel about Hank Williams Sr. Again, like you say, it's he's got a bunch of songs that are like they're like that where they're kind of like, oh, you have to know what he's talking about to get it. But it is done in a way that it's acceptable. At the same token, I still feel like if he was around today, he would be more like his grandson. Oh, wait, I can say fuck. I can say all these horrible things. Yeah, I'm just gonna write that then.
Yeah.
I that's how I feel about it. I really, and it's not just him. There's other musicians from that time period that I'm
Sure.
like, man, if you guys would have been born like 20, 30 years later, it would have been, you would have been right here with the rest of us.
Or 20 or 30 years earlier, because, like, if you listen to a lot of stuff in the 20s and 30s, it's incredibly vulgar and really out there in a way that, like, that stuff on this. In some ways, it goes even further than this because it's incredibly sexually explicit.
Quite
So.
so. That, like I said, this is not, it's not what I would call a safe album. And I mean that by saying if this is your first time ever hearing about Hank the Third, or you've at this point listening and gone, oh, it's just outlaw country. It's a little more than that. So just be prepared. Don't go into it with virgin ears thinking you're going to be okay. I mean, you need to steel yourself, but if you're used to the kind of music we've been talking about, you'd be fine.
Oh, sure, 100%. I mean, if you can, like, get over the fact that you might not like how a banjo sounds or steel guitar, you know, and it's what I say about folk musicians all the time. People who say that they like folk but don't like country, that their real problem is just they don't like banjos and southern accents. So, because they're the same fucking music. And you could take the lyrics to almost to you could take the lyrics to Thrown Out of the Bar or almost any of the songs on this album and put them to a distorted guitar, speed them up a little bit, and not even that much, honestly, because a lot of this the bluegrass stuff on here is picked really fast, and it would be right in at any fucking punk hall show you went to.
Exactly. And you know, when we talk about doing our Irish punk shows, it's the same kind of thing. I'm pretty sure I've said something similar here that I'm going to get ready to say here. Folk music and bluegrass are essentially punk rock before punk rock existed. If you don't think that's the case, go listen to, I don't remember who the artist is. Ben, you can probably correct me here, but there's a song called White Lightning that came out in the 50s, and it's all about evading the police. That is the entirety of that song. Tell me that has nothing. If you ever go listen to it, tell me if you couldn't put that into a modern metal, modern punk, or even like a modern hip hop song, and tell me it wouldn't fit.
Yeah. I don't know who wrote it off the top of my head, but I know that it was one of the famous renditions of that is by George Jones. So.
It is, and that's I didn't want to say that, but I knew there was someone before him, and I was like, I don't want to be like, oh, it's a George Jones song, and I know it's not. So he did make it popular, much like Elvis made some music popular, and much like other artists made certain music popular. But it's you go check out that song and tell me it would not fit into a modern vernacular with something more edgy, you know.
For sure, 100%. And you know. Anyway, back to this album. I think that, like I said, the playing on here is incredibly good because you can't have, there are flat picking exchanges on some of the guitar parts on here that are just amazing. And for those of you who don't know, that's just like really fast one line guitar runs. Kind of think of it, it's like the bluegrass equivalent of shredding. But it's incredibly intricate and hard to do. And it's done very well on this album, as you would expect. I really love his lyric writing. Because it is both representative of a life that growing up in the South, and, you know, I was never heavily involved in any criminal activity, but I knew people who were, because you do in small communities. But I also knew a lot of people who weren't engaged in stuff, but like would get drunk every night and then go to work the next day. And there's a lot of that reflected in here. The people that I worked with, or some of the people that I worked with on the boat, who would be like clean and sober when they were on the boat, but as soon as they got off, would go get an 8-ball and a 6-pack, you know. So just a slice of life that is very reflective, as we've been saying, of to punk or rap or people in a bunch of different communities.
And that's really what we're trying to say. I mean, there's a lot to take in from this, because this is the first time we've talked about this on this podcast, but it's something, it's not necessarily for everyone, but you can still maybe appreciate it and go, okay, I can see why this fits. I can see what they're talking about, what can I apply it to other musical genres or artists, etc. So didn't want to get too deviated, but just kind of give a little more info than just like, hey, we're gonna talk about this album, go away. I guess with that said, I pretty much said everything I need to when it comes to discussing what type of music to expect. Ben, you got anything else before we jump into songs or anything?
No, man, I'm good. I will just say that I can't remember which song it is, but there's one of the songs that's Not Everybody Likes Us. Actually, that's the name of the song, Not Everybody Likes Us. And so that is exactly it. Not everybody will get this. Not everybody likes this, but those who do, do.
Yeah, so I just want to start off, but before we start talking about the specific track listing itself, the pacing on this is amazing. This falls in line to where I really like my pacing, because it starts off really fast and it does end kind of slow, but not in a bad way. It almost like it ends slow for a reason, and you know, it wonderfully just rounds out the album. So I guess, Ben, do you want to go first? Or do you want me to?
I will go first, just because. So I already said that I really love how it opens with Satan, Israel, Straight to Hell. That, I mean, honestly, I like every track on here. So let me just say that. But the ones that really kind of stand out to me, Country Heroes, goddamn, I've gotten drunk a lot listening to that song. Not to fit into the stereotype, but it's the truth. Just, you know, it's a song about lamenting and loss and how you go back and you listen to old music and people, you know, his country heroes, quote unquote. So, and I listen to a lot of the same guys, and it's just finding that comfort in old music. D. Ray White, which is about a clan of guys who live in West Virginia who were famous in the Appalachian dancing scene and their family. Rising Outlaw, I think, was the name of the documentary that was made about it, or one of the documentaries that was made about it. I might be getting that confused with one of Hank the Third's album titles. Anyway, so it's a very autobiographical album about this clan of mountain people, and it's incredibly great. Lowdown, Pills I Took is a rollicking fun song. My Drinking Problem, another one that is like really great. Then Crazy Country Rebel, Dick and Dixie, which is an indictment of the pop country music scene. And yeah, I mean, there are some problematic lyrics in Dick and Dixie, but it's a pure expression of frustration from somebody whose family was in the music business, especially in the Nashville music scene or the country music scene, and seeing what it had become. So I'm willing to cut it just a smidge of slack for that. And then Not Everybody Likes Us. And as Buzz mentioned, the album closes with Angel of Sin, which is really just kind of a looped out dirge, which is really cool.
So the film you were thinking of is called The Wild and Wonderful Whites of West Virginia.
That's it.
And there's actually I posted something on my Facebook a few minutes ago before we started this podcast, because I just now found it and I didn't realize it's been around for 11 years. But apparently when he wrote the song D. Ray White, he went over to West Virginia and hung out with these people. And Jesco White, who is Ray White's son, did a small musical video with him to promote the film, and it's him doing his mountain dancing. If people don't know what mountain dancing is, or Appalachian dancing, it's a form of tap dancing / clogging. It has roots in Scottish and Irish dancing, as well as Holland. I'm struggling to think of the word, and I don't know why. But it's from that part of the world, and it kind of conglomerated and became this own little thing in Appalachia and moved out. And it's usually done to playing bluegrass. Well, he's playing this. He's tap dancing to Hank Third doing Straight to Hell. And it's actually a pretty cool little video because he's doing it on acoustic, and it's just it fits so well. But so my list of this is Satan Israel, Straight to Hell, Thrown Out of the Bar. Country Heroes is probably my favorite song on here, which is strange because it's one of the slower ones. And I usually like my stuff faster, but that's probably my favorite one. Followed very closely by D. Ray White. Pills I Took is probably another one I really enjoy a lot. Just very fun. Smoke and Wine, the first time I heard it, I didn't like it. The second time I heard it, I was like, was I not paying attention the first time? Because that's, I think, another really strong song on this album. My Drinking Problem is another one, just because that's very much like, yep, that's an old country song. I'm done with my woman, and I'm going to, and now she's gone, I don't have to drink anymore. I mean, that's the whole premise of that. Dick and Dixie, I enjoyed because of how angry, aggressive it was. Not Everybody Likes This, Angel Sin, or Good Way to Close It Out. There is not a bad song on this album, in my opinion, but those are the ones that kind of stick out more to me. When it comes to Dick and Dixie, if you're someone that gets very offended over certain words and insults, we've talked about this before, a certain insult for a certain type of individual, this is the way to look at it. It's not meant to be nice. It's meant to be an insult. And he's not necessarily talking about the type of person that the insult is directed to. It's just like every other insult out there. I think that's why I'm so laissez-faire with how I use my insults, because I'm like, it's meant to piss you off. That's the point. And I don't know him personally. I can't say this, but I feel like he'd probably say the same thing that I'm getting ready to say. If you don't like it, don't fucking listen to it. And that's kind of how I feel about this. When we hear things like this, it's like, okay, understand where he's coming from, understand what he's talking about. But if it really upsets you that much, then just don't listen to it anymore.
Yeah, I think he would say something similar, or, you know, I mean, I don't know. I haven't talked to him about it either, obviously, since I don't know him either. But it just, I mean, it is what it is. And, you know, as times change and appetites towards certain words change, because, I mean, you know, it's, we've talked about it before, and this is something that he is roughly the same age as me, maybe a little bit older, but not by a lot. That it was something that was tossed out casually, and that doesn't make it right, but I, you know, it is not something that I would use anymore, and I don't know whether he would or not, but, you know, it was something that was captured fucking, God, what, 9 years ago now or something? Not quite that long.
Yeah, it's so, it hasn't been that long. I remember that word still being a acceptable insult when I was in high school in the early 2000s. So, yeah. And that's about when this album got released. So it was kind of like, hey, it's acceptable. But again, it's not meant to be nice. That's the point.
Right.
And I think, and I know we're deviating again from here, but this is kind of where I feel when it comes to insults, when people get so angry and upset over certain words. It's like, well, that's the point, man. It's supposed to make you mad. Like, you know, the word fuck, you know, with the phrase fuck you doesn't have quite as much aggression as it used to. I remember growing up, like, that was, you should never say it. It's horrible. Now it's like everyone says that. And yeah. So it kind of loses its meaning. And I feel like the more something is said, the more it loses the meaning and the more we accept it. And there's a certain type of vernacular that is used in certain speech patterns in certain demographics of the United States that, again, uses it very flippantly. And we're finally getting to the point where people are finally starting to say, hey, man, it's not cool who says it. And I'm like, finally, you know, and this is a free speech issue for me. It's like, it's either all speech is okay or it's not okay. And I'd rather someone be pissed off than, you know, say, oh, you can't say certain words, because that's a dangerous slope. And I don't, that scares me more than, you know, saying you can't say this, you know, correct your fucking kids, teach them not to say things like this. But if they hear it, you know, deal with it. It's, you know, is he talking to you? No. Is he saying a certain thing about you? No. Is it right? No. Exactly. Just kind of
right.
Understand what it is. Take it for what it is. If you can deal with it and go, I can understand the context of the song. Cool. If you can't, listen to it once, so listen to it again. We might talk about them on this podcast, but Christian Death has a very popular song that has a horrible word in the very beginning, but you have to understand the context.
Sure.
So, you know, again, context matters.
It does.
And it matters here, and that's why I don't, this is why I'm, I don't want to sound like an apologist, but that's why I say what I said. It's just take it for what it is. If you're offended by it, I mean, don't take us the wrong way, but it sucks to be you.
Right. Well, and like you said, he kind of meant it to be offensive. So not necessarily towards the people to whom it is a slur against now, but as the insult that it used to be used as. And we'll probably spend too much time on that, but it needed to be talked about. Other songs that you liked. So let me ask. What did you think about what makes up the second track, which is like Louisiana Stripes and then the hidden psychedelic track?
So I like Louisiana Stripes. The hidden track, I didn't list them because essentially there are a few songs on that aren't on this album that are on other albums.
Yeah.
But it's cool because when you listen to it, it's very much like him kind of fiddling around on guitar, and the psychedelic part at the beginning is a little bit of a turnoff for me. But if you can power through it and you go, oh, this is him in the studio just or at home strumming away. And it's like, hey, I like this because this is now someone that's trying to come up with these songs, that's trying to come up with lyrics. Maybe that's not what it was, but that's what it felt like to me. For anyone that's never been in a band or never done anything musical, that's exactly what you do. You sit around and you strum and plunk at things until, okay, it sounds kind of cool. Then you come up with some lyrics and okay. And then I got some lyrics and then maybe I speed it up a little bit, you know, but maybe this is the initial the initial form of the song. And that's kind of what shows up on the hidden tracks, is it's almost like this is the initial form of what he was trying to write, and then he decided, okay, I'm gonna change the pacing on this, or I'm gonna add some words or take away some words. An example of that is when he does the slower version of Smoke and Wine. I mean, it sounds like a completely different song, even though it's the same lyrics.
Yeah.
And every track on there is essentially the same thing. It's like a different, it almost sounds like a different song than when he released the actual tracks on other albums, but you can tell it's the same song.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that vibe, in that it sounds like either somebody writing or just somebody just not really practicing, but just kind of jamming, because he plays a couple of covers, and then he just plays some shit. And then where they get the psychedelia from is they mix in a lot of sound effects and stuff like that into it, which you wouldn't necessarily have. But it creates something interesting. And to be quite honest, that it's 45 minutes long. I don't care what it is. I don't want to listen to any one 45 minute long track. So I often skip it, and it will not affect my grading. As a matter of fact, if you have a physical copy of it, whether the vinyl or the CD, that part is put onto a separate disc. So I hardly ever even think about it. When I think about the album, I think about the core songs we talked about. And then, you can be like, well, that's not fair, but it's the truth. It's what I do.
It is. And I think that's a very fair assessment. I don't like that it takes so long to get to the songs. That's the part of the psychedelia that I didn't like. It's like, man, you probably could have cut this down by 20 minutes, and even then that's long, but at least it would have been more acceptable. But there's a lot of ambient noise, and it not that I've ever done this before, because I haven't, but I know people have. If you've ever done certain drugs that make you see things and hear things, this is pretty much the beginning of that. Hidden track is essentially what it's like, is what I've been told. So there you go. That's your intro into drug use and why it's bad.
Exactly. All right. I guess the only thing left is to grade this thing.
You want to go first? You want me to?
Whichever you want. I'll let you decide.
All right. Well, I will go first then.
Okay.
So, the recording I listened to was actually on my iTunes account, and it's something that Ben gave me a recording of a few years ago. So all the songs were actually out of order, so it was fun trying to switch around and try to figure out which ones are supposed to be played in order to actually figure out how I was going to talk about this tonight. But with that's out of the way, musically, this is an awesome album. Everything is on point. The production quality is amazing. The playing is amazing. The fact that you've mixed really kind of, I would argue, three different genres of music together is pretty amazing, and still have it be a country album. So musically, this is actually getting an A+ for me because of that, because it's mixed really, really well. And it's I know it sounds weird for me to say this, but that's where I met with this as far as the musical production of it and the playing, A+. As a kind of edgy, angsty, punk-ish album, since that's what we're doing on this podcast, it's getting A- for me, not because anything is bad, but because of some of the songs are slowed down a little bit. While I appreciated them and I liked them, I kind of wish they were sped up just a little bit, not a lot. And then if I was doing this as a country album perspective, this would be a completely different answer, but from a more punk perspective, that's why it's getting an A- and not an A or A+.
All right. This is one of my 10 favorite albums of all time. When we did, 2 years ago, I guess it was, or something close to that now, our top 10 albums of all time, this was one of mine. And so it's an A for me.
I think when we did that, I had mentioned it first, and you and Dave were like, no, that was on ours too. I was like, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry, guys. But yeah, that's if you ever get bored and want to go back and listen to four of us from different genres talk about our taste in music, I mentioned this, and three other two guys were like, oh no, I gotta strike this now, we gotta talk about something else. But yeah, this is actually one of my favorite albums because of that, because it changed my perspective a little bit, from going just one or two types of different genres to going, okay, well, maybe country's not that bad, and going, all right, yeah, I should have been listening to this when I was younger, but okay. So maybe it'll change your perspective a little bit. Maybe it won't. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? I do hope that at some point he starts making new music again, or at least starts touring, because I would love to see him again.
He actually did. This year, he released some new music on his Facebook, and he posted it. I haven't heard it yet, but I've got him on my Facebook, and I see him post every now and then. So he start for a while, he wasn't posting at all. Everyone thought he was like hurt or something, but he started posting again, and he's got some new tracks. So I would
Yeah, I
see.
think the he had released, I don't know, I think it was actually a cover, but it was still cool. But I think he released, the last thing I heard was after the tornadoes came through there at the end of last year, he released something.
Yeah, and also he has a son,
Yep.
who is now going by Hank Forth, and
Or just four, they call it
or
anyway.
four, yeah, I think that's what it is. But he's instead of Hank Four in the instead of Four in the Damn Band, it's like Four in the something. It's still in the it's still in that. Oh, hey, I'm gonna do kind of what my dad did. Well, I'm gonna do a play on it with different, instead of calling it the Damn Band, we'll call it something else. But it's the something band. Like the name escapes me, but. It's not terrible. It's not bad. Just maybe check it out too.
I liked it. And we might talk about it on here, or we might not, but I thought that was a pretty good album.
Thank you. Well, Ben, I already know the answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Would you buy this album?
Yeah, why? Well, yes, I would.
I would too. The only album I would not buy is the very first album, and he even says, like, he's obvious about it too, is he's pretty much like, yeah, just download it, don't give that record company money, and that's what a lot of people did. So
I did have a copy of it, and of that, just before we get out of here, I his relationship with the record company, I completely understand. And yeah, they don't fuck those guys. They don't need any money. But even though it is not what he became, as somebody who like actually likes country music, I thought it was a fine album too.
oh yeah, it's if you can, I would almost argue that the first album is probably more like, if you're into country and not punk or metal, that's actually probably the album for you. But it is. I wouldn't give them money. If you don't know what we're talking about, the internet's a wonderful place. Look it up. Look what they did to him. Kind of screwed him out of some stuff, and you'll understand why he feels that way.
Yeah.
Well, with that said, Ben, what are we talking about next week?
I think we've mentioned the name a bunch of times, and in reference when talking about other people, or even like, I'm surprised it didn't come up today considering we were talking about transgressive lyrics and everything. I think it's time we do the man, the myth.
The shit show, literally.
Yeah, literally the shit show.
If you don't know what we're talking about, God help you.
Well, you'll figure it out. Just make sure that you're wearing some PPE if you go to one of the shows.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next week.
All right, thanks for listening.